For August the 14th, 2020, we talk about Fall Guys, Amazon Gaming, and we ask you about your favorite times when games were deceptive. Welcome to Level 340. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jella Prendez.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games, bringing the Tuesday energy for the first time in several years.
I know. Yeah. It's been like a while, and it's my fault. That's okay.
That's fine.
Fault feels like a strong word.
Yeah.
I
do not think that there is blame to be ascribed. You were the person who asked for it, but it's not like it was a problem or anything. No, just Tuesday is what the show started on way back. So, you know, in a way it feels comfortable. Yeah, but we are all here. We're alive at the very least.
Except for David.
Yes,
he's
David is
not here.
That's
possibly
true.
Alive.
Yeah. So I
checked on him today, but
I feel bad. I said we are all here, and everybody here and who was present. I did not mean to exclude David.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
He never listens to these, so he will not be upset about it. It's fine. He won't call you out.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. Sorry, I'm a little bit scrambled because I literally just came from another recording here. I will defer to somebody else. Jella, what's going on?
Sure. So a while back, I mentioned that I was going to record a burlesque performance, and I did, and it's on YouTube. The channel is Jella-chan, of course. So you can go to YouTube and find Jella-chan, and you can see the burlesque performance. It is to the song Harlem Nocturne. So that is the thing. Yay. Other than that, unfortunately, I ended up having to cancel all the rest of my events for the rest of this year for pretty obvious COVID reasons.
Right.
I was kind of like holding off on doing so because not all the companies were like allowing refunds, you know, like they were like waiting to see what happened to. So I'm starting to get that whole process started. So I will continue to finish out choreographies that I start in various classes and then record them and then post them out there in the world. And that will be my excitement instead of doing events. So,
yeah.
So that's a thing. Unrelated to that, I also have recently been rewatching Kindred the Embraced.
Okay.
And that's the old, it was like only one season, Vampire the Masquerade live action show that was on TV in like the mid 90s.
Whoa, there was an actual like World of Darkness.
You didn't know that?
No, I had no,
I had no idea.
So I've seen
I was live tweeting it.
Yeah, I've seen you tweeting this. I didn't know it was associated with the LARP. Yeah.
Yes. Huh. Yes, yes, yes. It's a show that is based on the Vampire the Masquerade world of stuff. And so like I watched it when it was extant way back in the day, but then because I am rewatching it now, all of the vampire players are starting to show up out of nowhere. And like, I found out that one of my belly dance instructors and her husband, who owned like the dance studio that I recorded the burlesque performance at, they both played vampire.
Oh.
And various other people I know, all these people are coming out of the woodwork telling me that they played vampire. I'm like, okay. So that's been fun. And yes, I did play vampire for a little bit too, back in the day when I did a lot of tabletop RPGs. As a matter of fact, one of my friends is suggesting possibly doing another a tabletop RPG version of this if we can get it all organized. So I might actually be playing Vampire again. I didn't know this because I haven't paid attention since I had my, you know, source book for first edition, you know, but like they're on edition 5 of Vampire now.
That's a beautiful book.
Saw it on Amazon. I was like, wow, that's all right.
No, so when we were doing Duck Fast, Duck Fast, when yeah. Gary and Brayton were doing their Vampiridice one-off show, I was like, I bet, you know what? Like, they're talking about, like, the Masquerade or whatever it yeah. is now. Like, they're talking about that, and I'm really kind of, like, jazzed about it. I'm excited about vampires right now, and I ordered that book, and it is one of the best, like, laid out and designed books I've seen awesome. In, like, the source book world. So, yeah, thumbs up on that.
Yeah, so yeah, like, David and I and Tim were all talking about just, like, different plot seeds and things like that. We were all coming up with all these ideas. Like, I was just, like, Tim was telling me about, like, how World of Darkness is, you know, like, setting up Vampire in 5th edition or whatever. And then, you know, basically, what it is more or less like the vampires were relying too much on technology, and then like the humans are you know, doing like a massive, you know, secret but you know simultaneous strike against the vampires, who now have to use like archaic forms of communication and stuff and be like off grid and things. And so I was like, oh, what if you like threw in some cyberpunk stuff, like, you know, technology forward, kind of shadow runny, and then like had hunters and stuff using that. Mm-hmm. And then like, here's the vampires with like messenger pigeons. I mean, like, oh my God, that would be amazing. Yeah. You know, so we were just having this really like long, fun conversation mm-hmm. about like, you know, like there would be this weird generational gap too between like newer Embrace vampires, you know, who are technology forward versus the old school ones. And like, you know, some of, you know, like, anyway, it was a big thing. I took it and ran, So nice. I don't know if that's going to be developed into anything, but I suggested possibly live streaming it or something if we do it. So, you know, so far no opposition to that. So that might be a thing. And if it cool. is, I will be sharing it. So
cool.
In nice. The meantime, you Exciting. Can await. Yeah, in the meantime, you can kind of like await my random live tweets of Kindred because I'm taking screenshots and making commentary, and it's pretty great.
The production value looks extremely cheesy. So
it is. It is so cheesy, but like it also is just like exactly the right thing that I need right now to mm-hmm. relax. And it's sad that it's such a small series, but boy, it is so much fun.
Yeah.
So.
Dennis, how about you? What's going on?
Not much. I had a crazy week at getting the physical preview copies of Deck of Wonders, like, printed and shipped out to the people previewing them.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, late nights, my go-to process for, like, just crank work, like, assembling decks of cards is to grab a bubbly water and mm-hmm. to put on Hosier. And then just basically go into a fugue state. And then I wake yeah. up on the other side and everything's in neat piles. So that was fun.
Yeah.
But yesterday and today, people started getting them in the mail, which USPS sandbags on their timelines.
Yeah. No.
I'm glad I didn't drag my feet on getting like the email of like, your stuff is actually on the way out to them, because mm-hmm. they showed up fast.
Yeah.
And it's been real fun looking at pictures and reading comments and having behind the scenes conversations with people. Mm. You know, I'm getting exactly the reactions I was hoping for on a lot of the legacy stuff in the game,
mm-hmm.
where it's like, you know, they'll unlock something that I haven't talked publicly about. They'll see it and they'll be like, wait, that's not right. That's right. That's what? You're like, mwahaha.
Yeah. Surprises. Yeah, so I'm not going to show my whole hand. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that has been a blast. And then tonight, like just before we started recording, so definitely by the time people are hearing this, I actually put the digital demo of Deck of Wonders up publicly on Tabletop Simulator.
Oh, sweet.
So yeah, that's, you know, I've shown it pretty openly, like anyone who asks, I'll give a demo to, but I've always kind of mm-hmm. kept it in my hands. Yeah. And then after Gen Con, everything just went so well, and I think when people have played the game, they get it that much mm-hmm. better. And so I've put it out there for anyone interested to try. So you can go, you can find it now. I'll put links in prominent places, socially, et cetera, where you can find them. And you can actually play the game, the demo yeah. version of the game anyway, should you be interested.
Awesome.
Yeah. So I've been eating, sleeping, and breathing Deck of Wonders. Thankfully, there has been some room for video games, and I'm excited to talk about that as well.
But that's good.
That is me.
Nice. Mm-hmm. How about you, Ben?
Related enough, I got to watch Dennis demo Deck of Wonders over the weekend for a short minute or two.
Yeah. Cool.
What was this, like a stream or something? Or
yeah, I think he was doing it. You were doing it through Steam, right? Through Tabletop Simulator.
Yeah, I was just playing. I was two people from Board Game Rundown, I think, was the show that we're on.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. So I was just like lurking on Steam and watching him.
I was like, you can play. And he's like, no, I want to watch.
Yeah. It was like that, but slightly less creepy.
But only slightly.
Still pretty creepy, yeah. No, I had like a pretty quote unquote boring weekend. I was staying in because I was on call for work, but I got to catch up on video games. I got to clean my apartment. So I got to water my plants, all the fun stuff. Yeah.
Do you talk to your plants, Ben?
I don't, but you know, I mean, they're doing good. They don't need any further encouragement.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
You don't want to get them inside their head, you know?
We have like a good understanding.
Yeah.
You know. They build up resistance to praise like Iocane powder. Like, throw them a parade to get that next couple of centimeters of growth.
Oh, jeez. Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like I've had a really like packed week since we last recorded. Like, so I am getting a new kitten, you guys.
I saw the picture.
Yes.
Yeah. No, my stepsister who lives a couple towns over, they live in a barn. And my stepbrother-in-law or whatever was, you know, walking out to feed the cow, and they saw one of the barn cats had a smaller cat hanging out of the back of it, and they're like, "Oh, okay, we have kittens. So we should probably find people to take those." And I was like, I had been considering getting Greta a little friend, a little brother or sister. And I went out and I fell in love with one of them. Just impossibly tiny, very young. I mean, like they were probably like less than a week old when I, when I first saw them. So like, you know, their eyes had just opened, like, the ears were still folded in when I first went, and then they were unfolded the second time that I went to visit. But yeah, like I picked out, like, it's a gray cat, but has some stripes, like a little bit of like a tabby kind of feature on the face a little bit. Don't know if it's a boy or girl. It's difficult to sex a kitten when they are that tiny. Usually it happens later when they get bigger. That it becomes more apparent. I don't necessarily care because I'm going to be getting them, you know, getting it fixed like right away as soon as I can. But yeah, like in about 6 or 7 weeks, I'm going to have a little kitty cat running around.
Nice. Have you socialized Greta with other cats at all? Like, do you know how that's going to go?
I've not socialized her with other cats. What I've done to kind of get grease the wheels a little bit on that is I have, like, the times that I have gone, I have taken a handkerchief and I have like rubbed the baby cat, like the scent glands on it. And also like got a little bit of the mom on smart. It too. And I like have brought that home and I've left it just in a place where she can inspect it. And she has like smelled it and has not like reacted violently against it. Generally though, Greta is like extremely chill and extremely open. You know, like to new people and stuff like that. So yeah, so hopefully it will end up going well. I do not anticipate, like, with her, like, she's never ever like hissed at me or taken a swipe at me, like, even in the early days. So
yeah,
we'll see. But yeah, I'm very excited about that. Baby kittens, their faces are so tiny.
You are becoming cat dad.
Oh yeah. I feel a little bit bad. I would feel worse if I was going to work and leaving Greta alone, but I do feel a little bit bad that she doesn't have a cat to, you know, pal around with or whatever to kind of keep her active. I just think it'll be better. Yeah. It'll be better for her emotionally, to have a little buddy. So
have you ordered a second camera for Duckfest so that we can see both cats?
So I have access to enough cameras that I can possibly have them. So I could possibly have multiple cameras. I might not need that though. They might, you know, I could just point it, change the angle and point it at the cat tree that I have in my office here. And they would probably be, you know, both be represented there, but yeah. But yeah, did that. I got my new TV that finally arrived, at long last, which is good. And that's been nice. I watched the black and white version of The Mist, which is the best version of The Mist and looks amazing on that television. I watched, What She Dies Tomorrow yesterday, which is a weird sentence. Okay. The movie is called She Dies Tomorrow. Yeah. I watched that. That's a, kind of an experimental independent horror movie kind of thing. It's good. Like it's weird, but it's, you know, like it, it, yeah, it's kind of hard to describe. It's kind of like a variation on It Follows, but no, I've just been doing a bunch of stuff. The bad part is I don't have a lot of video games to talk about, but we'll,
that's okay.
You know, we'll cross that bridge when we get there. But yeah, that's all that's happening. I'm going to go out and visit the kitten again tomorrow, as long as the weather holds.
Yay.
Yeah. Everybody's how's like, the ending? Oh, good.
How's the ending of The Mist in black and white?
How's the ending? How is the ending of The Mist? Oh, I mean, it's still one of my favorite endings in a film or any piece of fiction. Yeah, it's right, yeah.
Good.
The Mist is a good movie. Excellent performances in that. Yeah. So that's all that's up. So now that we are all caught up, I think that it makes sense for us to do the regular kind of show, you know, with the brief, not the brief, with the grind and the multiplayer. And the end boss. And why don't we get started with
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Jala, you've been away the longest, so I will throw to you first.
I was waiting to see if you were going to say the brief, because it seemed like you were pausing for a second, like you were about to.
Yeah, no. Just old habits die hard, you know?
Yeah. I was like, I was all for it. I was like, let's go ahead and throw a curveball. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. So I have been playing two things, but I will only speak on one of them. However, I will state that the first thing I've been playing is Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney, the first Phoenix Wright game. Mm-hmm. That one is reserved for a bonus level with Cole. Yes. So you will have to wait and tune into that. But just to let listeners know first, we are going to separate out how we talk about it into like generalities, no spoilers stuff, and then have like a spoiler gate before we talk about spoilery things. Mm-hmm. So like if you have not played it and you want to hear about it from our perspectives before playing it, like that's fine, you can do that thing. Yep. Although this is like an old as fuck game and I was like the only person who had never played it, so it's fine. But yeah. Anyway,
to give you a sense of where I'm at, like on day two of the first trial, Jala. So
yeah, it's
not
fine.
The first trial, like, real full trial. Yeah
you know that I move at a snail's pace when it comes to like anything that I'm trying to get through. This like a story rich game, usually, especially right now with all the stuff I'm juggling. So whatever, I'm almost done with it though, so you know, maybe I will finish it by the time that you finish it, Cole. So in other news, the thing I will discuss is that I finished playing the main campaign for Sniper Elite 4. Now, you guys know that I played this a long, long, long time ago with Sam, like after it first came out. And then, we just, you know, our schedules didn't line up or anything. And we just didn't ever get back to playing it. Then I started playing it with Dave. And then we stopped and went on to something else that was less stressful. You know, now we ended up going back to it, though. I've not done the DLC yet, which includes extra missions and such, but those are on the docket. Dave has now gotten them on some sale or another. And so, you know, we will be playing those in the nearish future. So you will hear me report back about that later on. Mm-hmm. Insofar as the main game, however, as opposed to Sniper Elite 3, the maps are a lot larger and more intricate than 3 or in Sniper Elite 2. And there's also a lot of different mission objectives as well as mission challenges. So mission objectives would be like your primary objective and then a bunch of bonus objectives. Like you can, you know, help eradicate the evidence of a downed pilot, you know, by going over and you know, blowing it up the plane or something, the remnants of the plane. And you can take out some extra targets or fetch some information for one of the rebel groups that you're working with or something like that. Those are different types of mission objectives that you will have, as well as your principal goal, which would be like, take out this rail gun, try to take out this particular target, fetch data or whatever, like whatever it is you're doing that particular time on that map. So,
I mean, you're making them sound like Hitman levels.
Well, it is pretty flexible. I wanted to emphasize with this that versus when I played the Sniper Elite 2 and 3, this game seems to support all different types of play styles in a more interesting fashion. So one map, the first map that we were resuming on, took 3.5 hours because
holy cow,
Dave and I were both being very cautious and sneaky and honestly sniping and not trying to alert anybody and all of that business. So because of that, it took a very long time because we were slow and methodical with how we were doing it. But that's, you know, right at the beginning. After that, everything took like 1.5 hours per map, and that's and to complete all of the objectives. And that's because essentially we'd both sneak in until we identified targets and tagged all the enemies and, you know, whatever it is in that particular area. Then Dave would move away from me to the opposite part of, you know, that quadrant of the map that we were on. And I'd be sneaking a little bit, but then eventually at some point I'd just go ballistic literally and start blowing shit up and taking out tanks, you know, wrecking all the different heavy vehicles, taking out large groups, stuff like that, just doing heavy, heavy damage, but not sneaking whatsoever. Meanwhile, Dave would be sniping people and, you know, like watching my back while I'm off there going, you know, Rambo on everybody. And then if, you know, I got overwhelmed or something, he'd run in because he would be close enough to run over and get me and, you know, come and pick me back up. And then we'd just both dissolve back into hiding for a little bit and then kind of like rinse and repeat and, you know, do that same kind of strategy the next time. Or if he got caught, I would start blowing stuff up and like jump out, even if I was in this, you know, sneak mode, just to confuse the crap out of the enemy. Because if there's two of you and they, you know, they're hearing shots from different places, they have no idea where the shooter is or anything like that. So it confuses the enemies because they don't know exactly where everybody is and all that. So, you know, it seemed like the AI, you know, was a little bit more flexible on this game versus in prior games where it's kind of like, you know, they're kind of all on your butt or they're not. Like,
yeah.
So anyway, he also, it was very funny because Dave kept on accidentally mantling everything and jumping off of stuff.
Okay.
And there was, and if I was giving him hell about it because I was like, Dave, stop jumping over everything. Cause I had to run across the map and go pick him up and stuff like that. But there was this one point where I was on like the third or fourth floor and I accidentally mantled something, fell off the building. And it was like the only time I had done that, but I fell off the entire building and he had to like jump down several floors, you know, very, very carefully to try to come and retrieve my body because I jumped off the building. I was laughing so hard because, you know, I was giving him shit for like two missions straight about jumping off of everything.
And then you went and did, you know? And you went and did the thing.
And then I went and did, not only did I do it, but I did it in like a big bad way. You know, like I fell off of the freaking Notre Dame Tower or something. Like, it was bad. So, but anyway, the ending wasn't as gratuitous and over the top as Sniper Elite 3. Like in Sniper Elite 3, they give you basically a big cache of weapons and all these like rocket launchers and stuff, and you get to do like some major mayhem in that one. this one is you know, not as cool as that. I mean, like, you get to shoot a plane as it's trying to take off to stop the villain guy from getting away, but, like, you know, and then there's, like, an airstrike right after that as you're, you know, running away from the shit blowing up, which is, okay, that's kind of cool. But, like, it wasn't as epic and as absolutely ridiculous to where I was laughing my butt off like I was in Sekiro Elite 3, because it's overacted, it's hammy, you know?
Yeah.
And all of that. So this one was, like, less hammy, less ridiculous, but also that kind of was like, I don't know, I kind of liked the you know, kind of hammy aspect to it from Sniper Elite 3, actually. Mm-hmm. But overall, the game plays, you know, really solidly. It's a lot more flexible, and I definitely enjoyed it. And like I said, because it allows for different play styles, you know, we were able to split up and both be sneaky. We were able to, you know, like, confuse the targets and make it to where, you know, even if they had a lock on one of us, you know, but just by shooting something in a different area, like, it would confuse the crap out of them. They wouldn't know, you know, exactly, you know, how many enemies there are or where.
And yeah.
Things like that. You know, and it gives you lots of different things to do, lots of different targets. So, you know, like, different types of objectives that make it more fun, where it's not like, okay, which guy am I shooting today? It's not necessarily that. Sometimes you're going in and getting, you know, fetching somebody that you have to keep alive or, you know, something like that. But it's not like you have to sneak with the guy struggling or anything like that, that, like, you just have to go in and get him and not kill him,
yeah.
You know, essentially, and then, like, the truck comes and you're fine. Mm-hmm. But there's lots of different environments and a lot of different levels too. Like, as I was saying, there's buildings with a bunch of different stories. There's cities that are tiered. This is set in Italy, so it's, you know, like, different layers, like, where there might be a canal at the bottom and then another layer of city, and then it kind of spirals up from there. So there's, like, a lot of different elements to consider, you know, with that. There's also, it feels like there's more enemy snipers posted in different places than there were before.
Mm-hmm.
But I just might be because I haven't played the older games, in a while.
Yeah. Sure. It might just feel,
but yeah. Yeah. But either way, like, it's definitely some solid fun, lots of fun to co-op it, especially because, you know, two snipers are better than one. So, you know, I definitely will be playing the DLC for that, but that is the only game that I will be speaking about today. Any questions about Sniper Elite 4?
Yeah, how's the checkpointing on the missions? Like, it's 4.5 hours. Okay, yeah.
It's great. Like, it checkpoints all the damn time. Like, you get to a new section of the map and it checkpoints. There were a few times where I'm like, oh, God, we died. I hope it doesn't start. Oh, it's right there. Cool. Like, it saves it. It saves it. And sometimes that's to, like, your detriment. Sometimes it's like, oh, shit, everything just hit the fan and it saved it here. Oh, no. But, like, you can usually wiggle your way out of it. It's not usually, like, a death sentence to have that. Like, we did never find ourselves in the worst possible situation where we had to, like, reload the mission or anything. Mm-hmm. It wasn't that kind of a situation. But yeah, there were definitely some times where, like, all the guards were still tripped off. And it's like, oh, God, we got to run away and hide for a minute before we can get back to what we were doing.
Yeah. You know?
Must have been the wind. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So
it's funny, but, you know, when we talk here, you know, a lot of these games, I really only ever get, like, the description that you guys offer. And maybe, like, you know, screenshots, maybe a video. Mm-hmm. I think that, I guess, in my head, the version of this game that was, you know, that I was playing as you were talking about it was more sim-like. And when you said that, when you did co-op with, you know, with Dave, and Dave was also sniping, I almost wanted to, like respond and say, no, that's not how it works. Dave's your spotter. Dave's your spotter, right? Like, Dave is, like, telling you, like, the inclination and declination so you can like make your shot and get away. And like I stopped myself obviously because it would be really dumb to correct you on a game you played and I didn't. But like
it would be a very cool thing to do though.
That hurt. That you wound me.
Oh wow. Wow.
I would at least try to do it as a joke, obviously. But it's just funny that like the different versions of the game that we built in our head based on based on the descriptions.
Well, I especially since you guys, okay, Cole, I play a lot of the stuff that you play, but like Dennis mm-hmm. and Ben, I don't necessarily play the things that you play. So like the version that's in my head, because I will not even know what it looks like or anything in 90% of the cases because mm-hmm. I don't go looking for information. I just kind of come across stuff in the store and that's how I find things. Mm-hmm. I don't read news about games unless I'm doing it. So, but yeah, like the version in my head is always very, very interesting and very different from when I Google it, if I get curious enough to do so. So, you have the binoculars, you can both tag enemies and stuff to make it very clear, you know, what you're going to hit. And you can talk about, okay, I want to hit this guy over here, and you've got the same map and everything. So it's easy to coordinate, especially if you're on voice chat with the person. You know, how you want to go about, you know, playing the game and doing everything. So you don't end up, you know, necessarily having that spotter role. It's more like I was saying, where it's like, I would run out there and be using my automatic up in somebody's grill, you know, as somebody else was running up behind me and about to shoot me, you know, Dave would snipe that guy, you know, from the bushes across the map or wherever the hell he is. So, you know, on top of a building or something, you know,
mm-hmm.
so, but, give me a reason and I will explode things. Don't give me a reason and I will still explode things. So, that's how that works.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. Sniper Elite 4.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's see here. Dennis, you said that you had been getting around to playing games. So I'll call your bluff on that. Prove it. Prove you've been playing games. Yeah.
I didn't know I was going to have to talk about games tonight. I thought I could just say. Jen and I were looking for some new co-op hotness to play and wound up downloading Salt and Sanctuary.
Oh, dang.
Yeah. Wait, I know that game.
That's co-op?
That is co-op.
Oh.
In the way that Dark Souls is co-op, right?
Okay, yeah.
It is not quite as obtuse to do an entirely co-op campaign, but as I'll get into, it's close. Mm-hmm. It has its frustrations.
Yeah.
So Salt and Sanctuary, for anyone who has been under a rock, I guess, is a 2D Souls-like.
Yeah.
I think it's it's and really like it directly inspired by Souls. This is mm-hmm. As much homage as it is anything else, which I appreciate, mm-hmm. especially because I've been out of the Souls circuit for a while, so starting this up really felt like kind of a homecoming, and I got to appreciate it from that angle. The conceit is that there's like a princess, and this is you know as much about the story as you do in any Dark Souls game. In Salt and Sanctuary, you're on a boat transporting a princess who's kind of what's holding your world together. Bad guys attack the boat. You wash up on shore afterwards and like, I got to go save the princess.
Mm-hmm.
Which I thought is a beautifully like Mario-esque, like it is Mario, but in the darkest, grittiest way.
Yeah.
And I liked that a lot. That was not lost on me. To do co-op, so you can at the different shrines, which are like the bonfires, you can make an offering and have different NPCs show up. One NPC is a sellsword that allows you to summon in another player.
Mm-hmm.
In the starting menu, you can choose as a starting item, or like when you create your character, you can choose as your starting item the sellsword offering.
Okay.
I think it's just called a stone cell sword. And that's how you get the player in. So both players have to start a character separately. And then one character has to get to that first shrine and, you know, hire the cell sword, then use the cell sword to bring in the next player. And then from that point on, you can go forward together. With the big caveat that when you summon a sellsword to your shrine, you don't summon it to every shrine. You summon it to that shrine.
Right.
Which is going to do you just fine for most of the game. And in general, by the time you get to another shrine, you'll have another effigy to sacrifice, or, you know, another offering to bring a sellsword to that shrine.
Mm-hmm.
But we definitely ran into situations where, you know, in between sessions, if you close the game, you got to summon the person back in. And it's like, oh, shit, we were really deep in this area and didn't have a sellsword. Guess we're teleporting back to the beginning.
And we have to go through these levels all over again. Yeah.
Which, you know, the way, you know, space compression works in these games, it's not that bad. So it never harmed us that much. And then you can also summon in someone, I think it's a guide, who acts as like a teleport between shrines. Again, only at shrines where you've hired them in, and it is, you know, one guide per shrine.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, gradually it becomes easier and easier to keep co-op going. But if that ever becomes a scarce resource, or, you know, I get the impression that the game, it kind of doles them out more and more liberally versus less. But if we ever got into a situation where, you know, we didn't have the resources we need, and we felt kind of scared about how far we'd gone without a way to feasibly come back, we might just have to leave this game running in rest mode for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the co-op setup. Suffice to say, it is obtuse enough that Jen and I managed screwing it up in a way that Jen's character was on my PlayStation account and my character was on Jen's PlayStation account. Completely unintentionally. Like, I was scared I was going to screw it up. I worked extra hard to make sure it was right, and we still did it wrong. so we named her character is Janice, and mine is Denifer.
Yeah, that's good.
Hedge your bets. Yeah.
But even funnier, bless you.
Excuse me.
You choose your class at the beginning, and it's mostly a meaningless choice. Jen went kind of the mage class. And then I just, out of curiosity, chose chef.
Oh, which, right. Yeah.
I don't know if that's I forget what the name for it is in Dark Souls, but, like, you know, the character that comes in at true level one.
Yeah. The deprived.
Deprived. Yeah. I started with some potatoes. That was cool.
Cool.
And chef's hat, if I ever want to wear that. But, you know, I kind of walked in to this game with a bit of swagger, and Jen was the first one to go and make her character and play the tutorial level. And it's got that convention of, like, hey, you're going to go through a tutorial level that then you're meant to die to the boss at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm watching Jen play, and, you know, I'm like, okay, I recognize this, you know, again, this is homage as much as anything.
Strong
else.
Attack,
like,
weak attack.
This speaks my language.
Yeah. Yes. Stamina meter. Yeah.
So Jen got a good way in, but ultimately kind of succumbed before getting to the boss proper of the tutorial area. So I get set up, and I'm like, all right, you know, after realizing, oh crap, we screwed up profiles and everything, it's like, all right, I'm curious to see what this boss is like. Let's see if I can show off a bit for my lady and and get a little further. I died in the second room, guys. I didn't even know
that's what you get, and bro.
I proceeded to get talks for the rest of the night, the rest of the week, and it has not stopped.
Yeah, no, as it should be.
So my retort, they threw just an in-joke for us. The someone couldn't remember chef as a word and used cooker instead.
Okay.
And then we mocked them relentlessly. And then since we've never used chef, we always say cooker. So every time she just outdoes me, like, fucking cooker. Which is a blast.
Oh, that's really good.
Yeah. The other fun moment, we're relatively early in, but the second area that we reached was kind of this village. I think it was called, like, the Watching Village or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of like a trap laden area. There's lots of, I mean, really, it's just like a crossbow turret set on the ground, but because the color palette is so muted, it's easy to miss.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you pay attention, you can see the trip wires. And you can, you know, you can catch that stuff. So there's crossbow traps. There's, like, giant logs on strings that swing down and slam you.
Yeah.
Those are really painful. And you know, it's got the same devious encounter setup. Like even though this is one continuous world, there is a lot of love and design that goes into individual encounters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for example, there's one in this area with lots of traps where there's an enemy that's kind of this ghost that kind of floats around the screen and is very mobile. And you are chasing it around as much as it is chasing you, which means it's very easy to kind of stumble across the tripwire trying to defeat it.
Mm-hmm.
Or a couple runs in trying to beat the boss, and we're starting to get it down. We've really got a groove. So we fight this thing. We kill it. And the one other thing is, you know, sometimes enemies drop items. Other times they will also drop gold.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to walk over and like walk over the gold to pick it up. And Jen's a bit of a completionist, right?
Right.
She likes to get everything. But the way we killed this bad guy is the gold kind of sprinkled over one of the tripwires.
Oh, boy.
And so I start hopping past to get to the next part of the level, and Jen's just standing there.
Mm-hmm.
And I realize what she's about to do a half second before she does it. I'm like, no. I'm not. She intentionally steps on the tripwire, taking out me and her, just so she can get the damn gold. She knew that was going to happen. So we heal up. We get to the boss. It's the furthest we had gotten towards beating it, but we wound up losing at the end. Like, right, there was like a sliver of health left on the boss.
Yeah.
And so we're back there. I'm like, gee, it would have been nice if we had one more Estus. I wonder what happened.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, yeah, but I have more gold than you. this is my first time in a Souls game doing a significant amount of the run co-op.
Mm-hmm.
I've dabbled in it before, mostly just to help with bosses, never really with people that I knew, just because right. How obtuse it was. Like, jolly cooperation is really jolly when mm-hmm. you're doing it with a friend persistently through the game. Like, it's just been so much fun. And it's, you know, it's like watching a horror movie together fun, where there's parts where, you know, it's tense and you're both like, oh God, you know, what's going to happen? But it's just that, you know, that much more lighthearted because you're sharing that.
Right.
And that's, I'm really excited about playing the rest of the game. So that is when we're not doing Minecraft Dungeons or the Mario games. Basically, once the kids have gone to bed, Salt and Sanctuary comes out.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, we played that and covered it on Bonfireside Chat. And, you know, there are some problems just like generally with... like certain boss encounters, and like aesthetically, there are things that just kind of like we wish didn't stay out. It's still like really impressive. Like, it's made by two people.
Yes, incredible.
You know, which is just monumental. Like, nobody can take that away from them. And like, it's neat. Like, the lore in it's really good. Yeah, no, and like, it sounds like I have no recollection. I have zero recollection of there being any like multiplayer or co-op at all. So like, I wonder if it has mm-hmm. been like substantially patched since we covered it. I think like 2016 or something like that. Fuck, that's a long time ago.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. It's also just one of those games where it's very clear it has 99% of the things it has because Dark Souls had it.
Yeah,
you know, like it's at that level of imitation.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think they pull it off very well, but the, you know, the reason you're able to summon in another player is probably because there was a mechanism for that in Dark Souls. And the mm-hmm. reason you find messages in bottles all over the map is because Dark Souls.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think, but you talk about the amount of lore in it. My God, I almost fell out of my chair the mm-hmm. first time we opened up the skill tree.
Yeah.
You want to overwhelm someone right quick. Right quick. Oh my gosh. That's Path of Exile-esque right there is what that is.
It's a lot.
It is. So yeah, it's, you know, I'm generally going for pikes just because I found one that I liked early on, and I, you know, that you don't have a lot of vertical options, but you know, have long range. Jen's really leaned into the magic element, and so has upgraded her wand, and we haven't really found many spells yet, so I'm excited to get more verbs on the spell side.
Mm-hmm.
But Salt and Sanctuary has been a blast.
Nice.
So a question that I have, knowing nothing about the game, with like all the different ways you can upgrade, are they all like equally meaningful? Like, do they have like game impact, or is it just like a lot of auxiliary things?
I have no, I mean, it's a lot of plus one strength, plus one dexterity, you know, plus one vitality or endurance.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are weapon specific ones that are listed as a class. So I think the one that I'm taking is wherever, I'll look ahead in the tree, which truly like branches out a lot.
Yeah.
But I'll look ahead and try to find the next, I think it's called Pikeman, skill.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And those get more expensive the more of them you take. And I think have a more focused set of bonuses, but I haven't seen anything that's like, truly giving you new verbs or abilities. My impression is that that is all based off of items and scrolls you find in the levels. Similar again to Dark Souls.
Yeah. It's like the skill tree is kind of similar to like the sphere grid in Final Fantasy X.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. That's another
good reference point. Gotcha.
Again, having the language of Dark Souls has been helpful, but I know nothing about this specific entry. Like I didn't do mm-hmm. much reading about it, didn't follow it very closely. So I'm divided on how much I want to go wiki it, because it's got the same, like you pick up an item, you're like, what the hell does this do? Like mm-hmm. what that means nothing. These words, I know these words altogether are words, but they don't make any sense in this order.
Yeah. They bring over some of the mechanical obtuseness, and specifically mm-hmm. with the way that at least the version that we played did not have like a map or anything. I think that you would be doing yourself a favor to like go and like look at something on the wiki. And if you feel bad, think back to the way FromSoft assumed that people would look at the wiki while they were playing Demon's Souls. So they like helped build out the initial version of it. So looking at the wiki is part of the experience. So,
yes. And that's kind of, I know the other games have been designed with the wiki in mind.
Mm-hmm.
And I, again, everything else in this game, I've successfully made the assumption that it parodies Dark Souls or, pays homage to Dark Souls. Mm-hmm. So that's probably in line as well.
Yeah. Nice. Salt and Sanctuary, game I haven't thought about for a while. I want to go back and like look at the wiki as myself, because there's some like really good like visual designs on bosses and stuff there.
Yes, there is.
Yeah.
All very, very muted still right mm-hmm. now. And I'll be interested to see if and when it does resort to pops of color.
Mm-hmm.
Do that effectively.
Yeah. Did you have anything else besides Salt and Sanctuary?
A little bit of this, a little bit of that, the other standard stuff, but nothing significant to talk about. So
cool.
Doing lots of gaming, but that is the big game to talk about.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
All right. I got two things. One you already know, the other one's something new. So for the one you already know, I've continued playing Ghost of Tsushima. It's still good. I 100% of the first area. There's three areas that they show you, at least at the outset of the game.
Mm-hmm.
So I assume those are the areas of the game, yep. But we'll see. So I'm working my way through the second area now. It's getting to the point, I feel like I have this conversation for every one of these games with you, Cole, where it's like, I start talking about how I'm starting to get bored, but then I'm trying to trudge to 100% it. And then you very justly remind me like, hey, you should have fun with the game that you're playing and not make it a chore.
Right. Yeah.
So we'll just say that we'll have that conversation and we'll just skip over it, but that's basically might be what's happening.
Okay.
But it's the cool part about it is, I guess, like anymore, like more and more in games, I'm getting more and more sold by like the cosmetic abilities like that characters have, which mm-hmm. is something I wasn't really interested in years prior.
Yeah.
But like that is definitely one of the cool things that you get from like scrounging through all these areas. So you get like sword covers, you get you can find merchants who are like there's like a white dye merchant and a black dye merchant.
Okay.
Which are like really cool thematically, because it's like you stumble upon them. They have these like giant vats of like cloth dye. It'll be in like very cool areas that kind of represent it. So like the white one's like on this hilltop, and then like the black dye person's like the kind of the bottom of this like mountain that's like really like, I don't know, Mordor-esque kind of, but like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's all very beautifully presented. But each of them give you options of like specific costumes of like the ones that you already have, but with those colors emphasized. So mm-hmm. like that's just kind of like a cool twist. And then like, so as one of the elements I'm starting to get a little bit tired of is, man, I really like doing haiku poems like the first two or three times. But like once you get to your 15th haiku poem, you're like, all right, I think I'm done.
I'm just gonna.
Are you hitting repeats yet?
No, I think, I mean, they do a good job of the, so the one of the cool parts of the haiku part is they tell you to write on a theme. So each of the themes are different. Like, so one might be like death, one might be like fear, one might be, I don't know, endurance, you know, it's like different themes like that. It will be like what the theme of the haiku is. But I haven't seen anything that's like repeated. So no repeated lines or anything like that. But and you get like a different like colored headband for doing a haiku, so that's your kind of prize, I guess, that you can go and take. But like the swordplay is still a lot of fun. Some of the encounters still are a lot of fun, like the like you can do duels. I think every duel that I do with a person's when I turn on the Kurosawa mode, and I think that's a lot of fun. yeah, I mean it's still a pretty enjoyable game. Like the story you can kind of take or leave. In terms of like the characters are some of they're varying degrees of interesting, I guess. But for the most part, like, you know, it's not it, like it's not like kind of like The Last of Us 2, where every character is like pretty well fleshed out and like has like differing motivations. Not that that's like the end all be all of a good game for doing that. That's just one of recent memory. It's not really like that, but it is better than like maybe a typical Far Cry game where it's like interesting bad guy and then everyone else is flat, like, you know.
I was like, here's somebody who's just kind of in the way of you and something you want.
So it's something in between those two, but it's still good. I mean, still, like, again, there's like a lot of like care taken respecting like kind of like the source material. So it, you know, it is very enjoyable to play, and like the environments are really beautiful. So you know, it's like, oh, you just like walk into a field of like cherry blossoms and it's like gorgeous. It's like, oh, okay. I haven't seen this in a game before, so this is really fun.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's like, you know, still thumbs up, still worth playing for sure. Anyway, other game I want to talk about is the other game that I've been playing a lot over the weekend is a game called Fall Guys.
Oh yeah.
Have you guys heard of this game?
I have played a Fall Guy. Singular.
Okay.
One time.
I don't know what that means. Oh, you've played. Okay, I see. You've played it once.
Yes.
All right.
I'm happy to hear that you're playing that, Ben, because that is very popular. And you know, we can be on a we can be on a trend here. Describe Fall Guys.
Yeah. So it's similar to the game show Most Extreme Elimination Challenge from the early aughts, if people remember that. If not, it's basically a game where you start on a server with 60 people and there's five different mini games. Mini games are kind of like Mario Party games, but they're more in the vein of Most Extreme Elimination Challenge. And I think one of the motivations they had for the game was, like mascot costumes, like people wearing like bulky mascot costumes and being really hard to like move around. They thought that was funny. So they thought they would make all the characters like that. And so it's very quick games. So just to give you an example of a few of them, like maybe like a third of them are like obstacle courses. A third of them are like team battles where you fight one another. And a third of them are something else that I can't categorize, I guess. But like one of them, for example, is there's like rows of doors and like some of the doors are blocked. So you can't like jump through them. And the other ones will like topple if you run into them. And so you have 60 people running through these and only the first like 40 people are going to qualify to go to the next round. So it's this like kind of like mad dash horde situation where it's like, you don't want to be at the very front. Cause if you jump into a door and it's wrong, then you're kind of like behind and you have to like figure out where to go. You kind of want to be like right in like the front third of the horde and let them like push you ahead and stuff and react to who's jumping through doors. And then basically it'll boil down to in the last game, there's only can be one winner. So it's like a battle royale in that sense. And so there will be some type of game where it's like everyone gets eliminated except for one person. And then whoever wins, you get like a crown as a reward. And then they have like a store that you basically can send your like experience currency, which are this like purple coins, and your crown currency on different like customizable things for your character. So the interesting part about this game is it seems like it would be like a free to play type game, but it's kind of in the same vein of Rocket League where it's like a $20 price point to get into the game. But then they have a lot of like kind of like free economy that you can take advantage of and like get customizables. And that's kind of the package of the game. yeah, it's, but it's been a lot of fun. Basically exclusively, I've been playing it with people on Discord and, I think, one with a couple friends on Twitch and then one with some friends, back from college. Yeah, it's just a really good way to socialize. I think one of the ways, one of the things I was kind of like hesitant about before getting it was I was worried that like you'd be in the situation where you get out the first round and you have to sit and watch somebody do this for like a long time. Mm-hmm. It's typically not the case though. Like very often everybody in your party will make it past the first round.
Yeah. No.
Yeah. And even if it's not the case, like, so I think the mode that I've been playing with is like three players. But if it's ever a situation where it's like two people don't make it in the first round, it's kind of like the rule, the unspoken rule that the one person will quit out and you just start over again.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, so it seems pretty friendly from that point of view. Yeah, it's just like a very like happy, enjoyable game for now. So yeah. We'll see if it takes the place of Rocket League or not. I'm not sure where the metagame is going to go. I could see people getting really good at this game like in a short amount of time because I know a lot of people are like streaming it, playing it really heavily. So I think like probably the next logical step was to do like matchmaking in it and kind of like so that you can kind of pair like people against one another. Mm-hmm. But this is not like a big studio that's making this game. Just to give you an idea of like how small the studio is and kind of how kind of flimsy the software is like, so what it was doing is when you get in the server in this like big party or whatever, it'll display your Steam name above your head.
Mm-hmm.
But what people started figuring out was that you could change your Steam name to be HTML tags.
Uh-oh.
And it would read it as such.
Mm. So okay.
They were like blowing up the name. So that it was taking up like the entire screen.
Oh, geez.
So they had to nuke that completely, and so now everybody's name is like Fall Guy 1565. It's like they can still display the name, so you see 60 Fall Guy, blah 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 blah. yeah. So I don't know if they'll roll out a bunch of like features very quickly. It might be one of those things where it'll get an update like in 6 months to a year from now.
Right.
But yeah, for now it's a lot of fun. So. Yeah,
the thing that's starting to emerge, Ben, to kind of build on what you were asking about is that people who are really good will get very close to the end of the final area and then troll people by blocking them from getting through.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Like, we've seen that happen, but it's not that effective right now. And like there might be one person who's good at doing that, but since it's like 60 people, you might not even run into that person the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
Like there are a couple games where it's like there's one where it's like you're on this giant like rolling like pole, I guess, for best description. It's divided up into like five parts and they're rolling in like separate directions. Mm-hmm. And your goal is just like to not fall off or whatever. That's the only game type I've seen where people can actually do a decent job of like running and pushing into you, and you might throw you off balance and you might fall off, but you're intended to do that in that game mode. But the only time I've seen people like fall off is when they're like being a dick and they're like grabbing onto someone. Mm-hmm. And they like let go and they accidentally like go in the wrong direction and like fall off the map or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a lot of, oh no moments. Mm-hmm.
Kind of the other thing
I saw was I don't know if it's a final course or what, where there's kind of a balance beam to go across. And if one person stands perfectly on that balance beam, it's tough for people to get around.
If they stand, what do you mean?
Like it's a thin balance beam. And if one person, it's round as well.
If one person
stands on the center, everyone will try to jump around them and wind up just falling off the side.
Gotcha. Yeah. So I think that comes up in two different games. There's one where it's an obstacle course. So if they're standing there and that one's at the very beginning, like they're lessening their chances of winning the game. And mm-hmm. below that is just like a pit that you can just run across. So it's kind of like American Gladiators where like it takes longer to get through, but you still like, it doesn't like reset you or anything like that.
Yeah.
The other place it shows up is one that's a little bit trickier. It's one called Slime Climb. So I guess that could be a place where they could kind of dick you over, but you could just like grab onto them or something like that and take them with you or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and it's not like they are getting ahead by doing it. It's pure troll for fun stuff.
Yeah.
They can ruin one person's day and that's their fun.
I've seen it be bad. And this was back when they had the regular names, but I've seen it be bad for streamers because like a lot of people target the streamer if it's like a big streamer.
Sure. Yeah.
But that, you know, I'm not going to feel that bad about people who I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, no, it's whatever.
Huge streamers, if that's the worst of their problems, that's not a big deal. what was I going to say? The thing that I'm worried about is like people who are really good at like the last level, the one that like determines who the winner is, because I feel like that can just end up being like a shutout a lot of times. Like I haven't won a game yet. I've maybe played like 50 to 100 games probably.
Wow. Okay.
So it's there. Like there's been a few times where I've been close and I've been like either the second closest person or like there's been two people left and I've been the second person or the second to last person eliminated. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Have you run into cheaters at all?
There's been two, questionable like things that has happened. There was one where it was on the very last level where you basically run up this hill and there's like giant balls that are rolling down the hill that'll like mess you up. Mm-hmm. And like everyone was maybe like halfway up it and then somebody won the game and it was like, well, there's no way you can cover that much more ground that quickly. Mm-hmm. So like we were confused about that. The only instance I could think of, well, yeah. And nobody saw them like go forward. It's like they appeared by the crown.
Yep.
So that like that seemed really fishy. There's some legitimate ways to cheat where there's this one level where you're kind of like you're on this like rectangle mat and there's like two bars on either side of you. And there's these like vertical mats that come sliding through and you have to kind of like find the hole and like dodge them as they mm-hmm. slide through. Otherwise, they'll push you off the rectangle and you'll like fall to your death.
Okay.
So with that one, you can like pile up on people and jump to the sidebar or whatever. And then all these vertical mats like don't even matter. You're just like standing above it and out of their way. Yeah. So like that's a legitimate way to cheat, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. The only other instance I've seen is it was again in a final level where there's a level where there's like five people. One person has a tail and it's like keep away. You have to try and grab them and then you get the tail. Whoever ends with the tail wins.
Okay.
There is a game that started where it was the four people without a tail and the other person was nowhere on the map. And so it's like, oh, so what are we going to do for this minute while this is going down? And like we all ran around and looked for where the person was, but then nobody got him. And then mm-hmm. that person still won at the end. Yeah. So overall, cheating hasn't been too rampant. I do worry about the skill level. Hopefully they do like matchmaking at some point soon. Mm-hmm. But overall, it's a fun game. Good way to hang out with friends. So
nice. Yeah. Yeah, you know, I've watched some like footage of it. I've been tempted to like grab it just because it looks like it's like designed for really quick play.
Yes,
and that's cool to me. Like, you know, I have enjoyed watching non first person or third person shooter stuff be brought over to a battle royale kind of feel. Tetris, mm-hmm. You know, Tetris 99 kind of being my favorite of those so far, mm-hmm. anyway. But kind of seeing them make physical comedy into a into a game mechanic makes this really interesting to me as like an extension of like Gang Beasts or what is it, Human Fall Flat, right?
Yeah, the controls are really bare bones. I don't think I went over this, but there's a button to grab another person, and mm-hmm. it's if both people are grabbing one another, then you're just kind of like locked in, like you're never gonna let go. If it's one way, then you can grab on for a few seconds, but then you pop off and like you kind of back up a little bit and like kind of like have a shock or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then the other mechanic is like diving. There's a dive button, which you go slightly faster than running. So it's a way to catch up to someone if they're just slightly ahead of you. Uh-huh. But it also just like looks like adorable, I guess, where it's like you're just trying to go that like extra inch.
And don't you have to pick yourself back up after diving? So there's like a cost, like ultimately it would be faster to just run.
Yeah. There's a slight amount of time to get back up, but it's not too much longer than what it would be regularly. The mechanics that are good about it is like there's one where you're on these tiles. It's like Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade where some of the tiles will fall through.
Yeah.
And you're trying to find a path to the end. With that one, you can make it exactly three tiles if you like jump at just the right time and you dive at just the right time, then you can make it across. So that's like a cool way that you can do shortcuts in the game.
Nice.
The primary way I used it is the one where you're in teams and you're trying to push a giant beach ball like to the end of the course.
Yeah.
Like using that as just the little extra oomph to get it over the hump or past the barrier.
Yes.
It was good.
And they have one game that's essentially like Rocket League where it's like there's two soccer balls in the field And then it's like there's two goals on either side, and the area is kind of like dipped in towards the goal. So if it gets near it, it'll start rolling in. And you basically just play like soccer or Rocket League, however you want to think of it.
you're not even giving up Rocket League.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. I was thinking something similar. I'm like, oh my God, Ben.
You can't escape it.
But it's fun, though. It's good.
Nice.
Yeah.
Awesome. So that is Fall Guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And for me, I basically have not played enough of anything to really talk about here. So I think we can just move on. yeah. I just let the grind peter out here.
Anticlimactic.
The grind to a halt.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question you ask the nice people?
Yeah, I wanted to hear about when you've been tricked by a game and loved it. You know, being surprised or duped, those gotcha moments can be a lot of fun. There are frustrating ones, but they, in general, work for me. So I wanted to hear about your favorite gotcha moments in games.
You chose a very subtle post image here with the
won't be subtle in a second.
With it's a chest, though, but it has the chain curled out, letting people know that's a mimic.
Yes.
I haven't even played that game and I know that's a mimic.
It's funny, it's become such a thing that I feel like I bet you there are a lot of players who come in like that. Yeah. Is the primary thing they're looking for.
Chain curls in, treasure within. Chain curls out, better watch out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Greg writes, a lot of games do this, but I always love a game where you think someone is working with you, that they're a friend or an ally. And then at the end of the game, they turn out to be a bad guy. KOTOR 2, as one example, does this well. The Statue of Limitations for spoilers is well over by now, but I will not say any more. The idea that somebody in a BioWare game will betray you is, I mean, that's just expected. So
it's more of a plot point, yeah.
Yeah.
Check that off the bingo card.
Yep. Yeah. I know that's an Obsidian game, but it's a sequel to a BioWare game. Let's see, Ben, what does David say?
I know there's no David to line up with David this
right,
week.
Right.
David says, ignoring mimics because the competition is unfair otherwise. The old secret door with a crappy treasure that has another secret door with the real treasure behind it is a timeless classic.
Love it. Yeah. Similarly, the entrance to the Great Hollow in Dark Souls being two illusory walls.
Say not so much a door as a tree.
Mm-hmm. let's see, Jella, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says, I want to not mention games that have twists you can't avoid because you aren't tricked, you are just following the fixed story. So I'm going to mention gun weapon progression. As you move through a game, you face tougher enemies and better weapons, and you think you can't wait to get your chance with them. And then sometimes you get them and they are just bad. You have been fooled into aiming for them. In some games, you might even build towards the weapon and then have to live with those long-term choices. Cough, moonlight, greatsword, cough. But I'm going to nominate the Claw and Goldeneye. Looks cool. Bad guys rip you apart with it. When you get it, you might as well have two pea shooters. Terrible weapon that makes you think it's going to be great.
Yeah.
What about the double Claw, though?
Yeah. God, I guess I never realized that the Claw, like the name of that weapon, is a sick burn against the studio head at the time, Ken Lobb. They're like, we're going to make this, we're going to name this gun after this person at or this boss that we hate, and it's going to be a terrible gun. Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Dennis, what does David say?
David says the subversion of patches at the end of Dark Souls 3, scratched off the bingo card. A lot of bingo card scratching. was absolutely chef's kiss amazing.
Nice. Yeah. So the subversion of patches in the Ringed City, the final DLC there. just so people are clear. Although that was the twist there was spoiled with if you know any Scandinavian languages, we'll leave it really? There. Yeah. The character name is a synonym.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah. Let's see here. So David writes, Callum writes, the story twist as to the real fate of old humanity in Horizon Zero Dawn was awesome. You knew it was post-apocalyptic, but just not how much. Also the, hey, Lovecraft actually in Bloodborne. Bloodborne's mm-hmm. trick of making you think it's one kind of horror story, but then it's another is very good. Although the game gets worse when you reach that point. So, yeah. So Bloodborne's second trick.
Yeah,
Ben, what does Dan say?
Dan says, it's been talked about a bunch, but the reveal of Raiden in Metal Gear Solid 2. I loved the game before, played the demo with Snake, and then got robbed of his gruff, socially ignorant personality with a character who seemed to be a joke to everyone, including the makers of the game.
And then when they took Raiden in Metal Gear Solid 4 and said, all right, you hate this guy? Guess what? We're going to make you the character you love, old and decrepit, and we're going to make the character that you hate this amazing badass that you do not get to control. So,
I also liked in Metal Gear Solid 3 how you could start the game as Raiden if that was your favorite character that you entered.
So. Yeah, or just it asks you, like, hey, which Metal Gear game have you played before, Metal Gear 1 or 2? If you chose 2, you start out in a Raiden mask, and, like, it was just there to, like, make people's hearts stop that, like, ah, shit, I'm playing as Raiden again, not as Big Boss. Yeah. Very good. It's amazing people like those games when those games try very, very hard to say they hate you. Jala, what does Jason say?
Jason says, my favorite thing I honestly never saw coming was the relationship reveal between Booker and Elizabeth in Bioshock Infinite. When that portal closed on the baby's fingertip, I gasped in realization, saying out loud, no way. And immediately started leaking from my eyes. It was an incredibly beautiful moment in storytelling. I get that there are those that have legitimate problems with parts of this game, but that story was one of my favorites ever.
Yep.
Ben, we can move on from this. We can be magnanimous.
We just need to, like, queue up these conversations, like, somewhere, and then we can just insert them so that we don't have to do them again.
Oh gosh, refer to. Yeah.
Yeah. Just link them. Yeah.
Let's see here. Dennis, what does Michael say?
Michael says, when I was young, it was Flood in Halo. Imagine a kid playing as human versus alien, and then all of a sudden a looming sense of dread in a swamp level, and bam, have fun with this new freaky body hijacker parasite.
Mm-hmm.
How well was the Flood kept as a secret before the game? Was that not in any of the promo material? Like, I cannot remember now.
No, it really wasn't featured.
That's cool.
Yeah. Like, everybody that I know who, you know, basically people that I talked to in school were like, yeah, like, that is a moment that sticks out to them as well. When a new faction is introduced here. I'm not going to read Elliot's here. Because Elliot gives a pretty big spoiler for Disco Elysium here. There's an element. There's a side quest that seems like it's going to be pretty frivolous that actually ends up coming back later and has a and basically, like, delivers the core spiritual and emotional message of the game. So I'm not going to do the specifics on the audio here, but I agree, Elliot. When that ended up being relevant, I was like, oh, okay, cool. They're doing that. Ben, what does John say?
John says, I don't want to spoil anything from The Last of Us Part 2, but it's great for stuff like this. Not just in a narrative way, but it also subverts your assumptions about how video games are supposed to work when you're supposed to be quote unquote safe and how much you know about the person you're playing as.
Yeah.
They do a good job of making you not want to play the game as you're playing the game. A couple different points.
Yeah. Well, I mean, especially with the dogs. Jesus. Yeah. Let's see here. Jala, what does Rookie say?
Rookie says, spoilers for Braid incoming. So if you care about that, bleep this out. As much as Braid has a narrative, it amounts to save the princess with some additional atomic bomb nonsense thrown in because Jonathan Blow is a pretentious asshole.
Harsh.
But the last bit... that was the spoiler. Okay, anyway. But the last bit where you help the princess outrun the brute that's trying to kidnap her is genius. Once you help the princess escape him and she makes it to her room, the game just stops and your only option is to rewind time. As you reverse through the level, it slowly dawns on you that this level in reverse looks a lot like the other guy is saving the princess from you. Mm-hmm. I had to put down the controller for a bit when I realized what had happened. I love this trick because it recontextualizes everything that came before and happens entirely through gameplay.
It's really good. It is a fantastic scene and it has a tremendous emotional punch when you realize what exactly like you've been doing this whole time. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Love it. It's actually really, really good.
Yeah, that's one of the things I would give the label inspired.
Yeah. And then finally here, Casey says, Dark Souls 2 making you wait so long to see a mimic. You check the first three, maybe even the first 10, but you think you are safe by the time you encounter that chest in Earthen Peak in a room full of poison jars and blithely open it only to hear that horrendous laughter as you pointlessly mash R1 and L1 to avoid instant death. They make you wait. And then in Dark Souls 3, it's like there's a mimic in one of the first areas, not the tutorial area, but on the High Wall of Lothric. they really play it fast and loose with that. I'm gonna do mine just as Dark Souls because I've been thinking about Dark Souls a lot today. We recorded Bonfireside Chat today, just, you know, it's been especially Dark Souls heavy even for me. But there is there's an elevator that you take in Sen's Fortress, which is kind of the big house of traps in Dark Souls 1. It's an elevator that you ride up and it stops primarily at two floors. And when you get onto it, you may notice, you know, as you get onto it at the lower floor and it takes you up to the third floor, you may notice that the floor of the elevator is bloody. And you think, all right, like, what's the deal with that? If you do not get off of the elevator when it gets to the second floor, when you get off there, you might stand on it as the elevator raises up and forces you into spikes in the ceiling and kills you.
You're so, probably watching the bloodstained messages of people doing the exact same thing.
Yeah, thinking, okay, well, like, what's the trick here? As you realize, oh, that's what they were trying to tell me with the bloodstains there. It's just a really good trick in an area that is full of very good tricks. It's like the perfect kind of dick move. And I don't know that they've done anything that approaches that level since.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, this is a tough one. I think I haven't talked about this in a long time, so I think I'll say Fallout 3. The one thing that happens in the middle right before you find your dad, without saying what it is. That's like do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I don't, actually.
This is the one where you go back into the 1950s simulation.
Oh, shit, Gotcha. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Just because it was such a departure from what you'd seen thematically up to that point. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like they did such a good job of world building this, like, miserable existence mm-hmm. that it was a really good left curve going there.
Nice. Jala, how about you?
Well, about the most memorable one that I have is part of the Jala bingo card. Lunar 2 Eternal Blue. The ending for that, so it has this unsatisfactory ending. It plays the credits and then it goes back to the title screen. I was so crushed when it happened because it was an unsatisfactory ending. And then like a week later, after being very depressed, I finally mustered. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to replay it and rewatch it. I know it's terrible, but blah. And then I got to the title screen and then there's an epilogue. Mm-hmm. There's an epilogue button, and then there's like several more hours of gameplay that leads to a better ending, like the actual nice. Ending. But yeah. like they don't tip you off that there's going to be something like that. Like it's basically the main character, whose name is Hero, is in love with a girl named Lucia, who is from another planet. And at the end, the unsatisfactory ending, she disappears to go back to that planet because she is the person watching over that planet until such a time as it can be re-inhabited. And so at the ending of it, like, Hero is just like, I'm going to find a way to get to you. And then, like, she disappears back to the other world, you know, to be alone, frozen in an ice palace.
She literally pooches out. Her home planet needs her.
Yes. And so, like, that's it. And then, like, you know, the other version, you know, like the final ending that you get after the epilogue, is like the epilogue is all Hero's quest to try to find a way to get to her. And then, you know, he does so and then awakens her. And then they are together on this planet looking at his planet. You know, and basically they are, he has connected the two planets together so that her planet can be re-inhabited and then they can be together. So it's very sweet in the end. But anyway, like, yeah, that was probably the best gotcha that I had because I had no idea there was an epilogue. And so I was depressed for like a full week until I finally got it. And then when I finally saw it, I was like, oh my God, there's so much more of this game. It's like hours of gameplay. Oh my God.
I'll actually get resolution to this. Good.
Yeah. When they rolled credits, it was so mean.
Mm-hmm. I think there are two times in the original Wild Arms where they roll credits on you. Like they roll credits after the prologue, and then like after you kill the initial, the major end boss.
Well, yeah. That's these days, but back in that, you know, like in 1994 or 95 or whatever.
I'm talking about Wild Arms was like 1996, 97 when that came out.
Yeah, but that was after Lunar.
Okay,
So like that was the first time I had ever seen anything like that happen. I was like, that's credits. That's the end. Mm-hmm. And then it wasn't like it's an overused trick now, but that was the first time I'd ever seen it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know,
nice.
Credits mean nothing anymore.
Not after Kojima got his hands on them. Yeah. Just Metal Gear Solid 5 has lots of credits in it. Runs credits all the time. And then Dennis, how about you?
Yeah. The most recent one for me came from Hand of Gilgamesh, the deck building game from the SteamWorld series.
Mm-hmm.
There is this completely random, incredibly difficult boss called the Duck Truck that you can find and fight. And it's like out of character with the rest of the world. There's nothing that alludes to it. Well, that's not technically true. If a character is confused, the little birdie swirling around its head is technically the duck, right?
Mm-hmm.
But like, there's no reason for it to be there. There's no lore reason. I don't know if it's like an in joke or whatever, but it's a very difficult fight. It has two moves that do absolutely nothing. And then one move that does just massive damage.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a crap ton of HP. The fight, it has a ton of resistances. The fight takes forever. And at the end of it, you get an item called Pandora's Box, which really is not a great item.
Okay.
It's not something you can use. You just equip it to a character and the character gets a 10% chance to inflict a random like debuff. And so it's odd. It's like it's a very intense fight. Like it is climactic. And then it's just a bit of like, ha, that was fun. And you're off on your way. So I need to research the Duck Truck more and find out if it's like a running gag in this series or what. But
yeah,
that one was a kind of a funny moment.
Nice. Thank you everybody for writing in. I you know think that we're going to continue trying to put up the multiplayer prompts on Mondays, give you a little bit of extra time. If you'd like to participate, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Watch for the prompts to go up. We really appreciate it. And Dennis, thanks for putting it up this time.
Thank you.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games that are exciting to us. Jala, what is the story that you have for us?
Necessarily excited about it, but it's a thing that's happening in the world that I noticed. Yes. So I'm talking about it. So Amazon is rebranding Twitch Prime as Prime Gaming after its original big budget game Crucible flopped horribly with like only 361 simultaneous players in June. And this is like a multi-million-dollar game that they sunk all this money into the development for. And it just, they pulled it. So, you know, it's no longer available. Anyway, so Prime Gaming will no longer require a Twitch account and will also offer more titles and content. Twitch Prime was one of the fastest growing parts of Amazon Prime. That's why they're trying to do all of this. And I've noticed, like, on Twitch, I just kept on getting more and more Twitch Prime notifications. And I'm like, God damn, what is all this? You know, like, and it's just like, oh, free game, free game, free game. And so, yeah. Like, you have to have the Amazon gaming app to play their free games, but they are giving you a bunch of free games. So, you know, like with your Prime subscription. So that is a thing. And that's basically, it's something that I had already noticed changes to that also I saw in the news as to why they were doing it and what they're doing with it. And that's it. That's all I got to say about that. I've no other statement. I do not have the app on my anything right now because I already have plenty of backlog. I'm like, well, I can add yet another source of backlog if I want to. It's like, I'm also not on the Epic Store because I don't need any backlog from the Epic Store. Like, I don't need it. I've just got plenty.
Just all of these spigots, like all of these faucets that I can't turn off.
I know. So that's kind of the situation. So that's a thing. So if you are an Amazon Prime customer, you get lots of games for the Amazon app. If you want to go do the thing, they're going to be leaning into that more. So that's all.
Yeah. I mean, uncoupling the stuff that does not relate to watching people stream games from Twitch seems good. Yeah. Like, it's weird that I would go to Twitch to see what free stuff they give me. So, nice. So I've got mine. This also is, I will frame this as me being excited, which is to say that Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2 was delayed into 2021. This is after it was delayed from summer to fall. I think that it had been kicked back to an October release date. Firaxis, the company that is publishing it or maybe developing it, I forget, I don't know the specifics. They put out, or not Firaxis, sorry, Paradox, rather. They basically just put out a statement saying that, we have a bar for quality. We have ambitions for this. We will not be able to meet those bars if we continue trying to reach this, this deadline that we've set. So I'll look for this to come out sometime in 2021. And yes, I want to play Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2. It looks like it's going to be good, but
it's also you're in a vampire mood, but you want to make sure that it's worth your time to play it.
Delays are good because it makes conditions better for the developers. That's good. They're not going to be in as much of a crunch as they get to a deadline they know they can't hit. It makes the game better when it ultimately ends up coming out. And it brings a little bit of certainty. I'm happy to know this now as opposed to later. Like, if I had, carved out time in October to play this, now I can, do other stuff then. So delays, on one hand, a bummer, but I've got so many games to play. It's not like this is, N64 times or whatever. So.
And now you can watch Kindred the Embrace with plenty of time on your docket.
Got a nice long runway. So we'll see. Bloodlines is so good. And it'll be neat if Bloodlines 2 actually has a good launch as opposed to the terrible launch that the original Bloodlines had 16 years ago. Fuck. Let's see here, Ben, what's going on with Rocksteady?
Yeah, so this is kind of follow up to some story that I talked about some time ago. They released a tweet, I think just 4 days ago is when we were recording this, just with a Suicide Squad poster and a tweet that says target locked for event that's happening on August 22nd. It's like a DC Comics event. I'm not sure what the event is. So it appears that Rocksteady's doing a Suicide Squad game. All everything's pointing to that direction. That's cool, I guess. I'm fine with that. It seems like a weird way to announce it, though, where it's just like with a tweet and not with accompanying media. Mm-hmm. But perhaps it was to head off, like, since people were like writing articles, like talking about them, requesting for like certain URLs. So maybe that's why they wanted to get in front of it. But I don't know. I'm going to play whatever they put out. So,
I mean, over the past few weeks, like the cluster of rumors had pretty much coalesced around Suicide Squad. I think that they knew that, you know, it was out. They might as well at least confirm it. That way people, you know, don't continue running away with a narrative for them to say like, yes, you will learn more here. And please, for the love of God, leave us alone.
Sorry, nice. Rocksteady.
Yeah. I wonder, people just
love their games too much.
I wonder if they're going to like continue, like, are they going to bring, so Harley Quinn is not really part of the Suicide Squad, or no, she is. She's not really part of Birds of Prey. Yeah. Yeah. I wonder, like, I mean, because there are characters from the Suicide Squad who were brought, like, who were in the other Arkham games, is this going to be part of the same universe, or is it going to be like a reboot?
Interesting.
Yeah, that's a good question to ask. Yeah. There's a lot of baggage with Harley Quinn, just as far as like all three of the Arkham games. So yeah, that'd be interesting if it's the same universe.
Dennis, what's going on with Minecraft Dungeons?
Yeah, man, they are timing things perfectly because we are closing in on the end of this game. And they just announced the big content update that's coming. So first off, they got a whole new DLC that's hitting. That's exciting. It's called Creeping Winter. And then probably even more exciting is all of the kind of free game updates that are coming out around it. So, you know, Minecraft in general has this legacy of just progressively adding and adding and adding more and more cool things. And my hope getting into Minecraft Dungeons was that would continue. And it looks like that is the case. So there's a bunch of new stuff coming in addition to some DLC. You can get new merchants, which right now in the game there's just two. There's one for buying weapons, there's one for buying artifacts. And you get what you get. Mm-hmm. Now you can save additional merchants and levels, bring them back to your camp. There is a blacksmith that will upgrade items for you. There's a gift wrapper that allows you to trade items with other people in multiplayer. And that's really interesting because, you know, everything so far has been player locked drops in the game. And you kind of get what you get again. So this gives you more control. And then you can also level up those merchants. Not exactly sure what they do, but that will be cool. Probably the most exciting and a little bit scary is the daily trials that they're going to introduce. So every day there's going to be some kind of different trial mode. I don't know exactly what it's going to be in or what's going to be in it, but a new daily trial to check out. And the last time Jen and I had a game with daily trials, it was Rayman Legends.
Okay.
And we went off the deep end. Like, you cannot miss a daily trial. So just come September 8th, maybe like a week after September 8th, just check on us. Just make sure, like, depending on how they structure these, you know, it could be you dip in, you have some fun with it, you get out, or it could be one of those things where it's like, all right, I need to dedicate 5 hours every night to make sure.
Oh, geez. That's too much. The game can't be that greedy.
No, I hope not. We will see. So yeah, I'm excited for that. And obviously joking mostly. And it's nice to see that this game is expanding, you know, both on the paid front. It's nice to have new DLC. We got the pack that had it pre-included, but also just in terms of free updates to make the game more interesting as you get towards that end game content.
Cool.
Yeah.
Nice. So new content coming this fall or late summer, whatever. I don't need to be corrected on that. Dennis, this is just a little side thing here. You know how for like basically every other episode for the past year, the movie The Other Guys has come up on the show?
Yes.
Like, yes, I was looking at Polygon trying to get stories. There's like an essay here, like somebody like saying, oh, this is the most important movie that Adam McKay has ever made or something. Like somebody's doing a redemption on The Other Guys, which is very weird.
Oh, gosh. That's hilarious.
They're also wrong. The answer is Step Brothers, but.
Oh my god.
So we watched The Other Guys because I remembered it very fondly, and then I realized I'd never seen Step Brothers, so I went and watched that for the first time recently here, like a couple months ago or something.
Yeah.
And I think it might be one of those movies where it is the best if you saw it when it came out.
Maybe.
It missed me a little bit coming to it for the first time now.
So I'm going to double down on that. I saw it for the first time a few months ago too. Like, not interested.
Oh yeah.
I understand the gifts a lot better now.
Yeah. I don't know. And maybe it also has to do with how much you enjoy the work of John C. Reilly.
Yeah, he's pretty great.
Yeah. Anyway, how do you all feel about bundling it up?
I feel buttons.
The credit. Thank you, everybody, for sticking around. But not for sticking around, for listening to this episode of The Level, level number 340. We appreciate you sticking around. There we go. That's when I say sticking around. Sorry, it's been a long day of recording for me. Also, we've had some technical difficulties on the back end. Hopefully, that is not apparent. when the final episode comes out here, I'm trying to think of things to promote. The Duck Bundle. The Duck Bundle is out. Go to duckfeed.tv/duckbundle. And you can get the full audio, 12 hours, actually, just shy of 12 hours of content from the Duckfest 2020 Enter the Compy Realm. You can hear, our little backlog roulette episode that we did, which was a lot of fun. I had a good time making it. And for people who had bought bundles previously and got frustrated, by just getting the loose audio files, I have also created an RSS feed, so you can just feed it into your podcast app. So that will be included on your receipt when you buy. And all of the proceeds are going to, like the event, go to Color of Change, raising money for that, because racial justice is still a pressing cause. So. Is there anything else that needs promoting that I can think of? Dennis, you're coming up. You're coming up on Deca Wonders here.
Yeah, August 25th. I was going to hit that in the sign off. But yeah, you can play it on Tabletop Simulator now. It's just there's a demo version out there. Yep. And then you can buy it, the physical version, on August 25th.
Nice.
Yay.
Cool. So I've been Cole Ross. You can see my tweets at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Fury. You can find me at Deck of Wonders on Twitter with underscores between the words.
I'm just Jellichon in all the places. Go there.
I've been Ben Merkel. That's all.
And stick around for some titles. Okay, so I don't have any because I've been flustered by the tech stuff, so
I'm gonna blame it on that. I have two, but I definitely like one of them better than the other one.
Okay.
So I started with some potatoes and swagger. That is the one that I want.
Okay.
The other one is grind to a halt.
Okay.
I would style it as potatoes and swagger.
Yes, yeah. I was going to suggest potatoes and swagger.
Yeah, that's that. Fine.
Just because I want it on the record, though, the double clob.
Okay. All right. Anything else?
That's me.
Ben?
I have two. I have Give Me a Reason and I'll Explode Things. And this one won't make sense, but I have It's Happening Again, because this is what you typed before you left. Well, that's one of the scariest things to type before leaving a room abruptly. Yeah.
Well, between, seriously, there's several different titles that actually seem to apply to the technical difficulties. Grind to a halt. Give me a reason and I will explode things. Craig blowing up, and then of course It's Happening Again. Yeah. Like all of them are like related to the technical issues.
But we will choose the non-cursed one. We will go with Potatoes and Swagger. How about that?
That is, I am fine with that.
Cool. All right. Well, I'm going to go. I have a few other things I need to do. I am going to take tomorrow off, I think. So that'll be good.
That is good. I am going to go eat food.
All right.
Have fun. Yeah. Okay. I will send you the audio for this tomorrow, Cole.
That is A-okay. Thank you.
Great. Have fun petting kittens tomorrow as well, Cole.
I will. I will take more photos and put them up. So
do that. Yeah. All right.
Yay.
Cool. Sounds like a sweet way to spend day off.
All right. Later, everybody.
Have a good week.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.